because we all have to work together. And just because I want to see more women on screen and behind the scenes doesn't mean we don't want to work with men. I've had amazing bosses who are men, and I've had great men working for me. So, yeah, it's just figuring out how to get that more equitable representation.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, where we celebrate women working in animation, illustration, and comics. In an effort to share their stories, we not only cover the steps they have taken to get to their dream jobs, but also the struggles. We highlight artists, writers, and producers, explore the ups and downs of working in the industry, and discuss female representation behind the scenes and on the screen. Deirdre Brenner is an animation producer with a career spanning 20 years on projects such as Fairly OddParents, Pepper Ann, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, and so many more. However, even with this extensive experience in producing, she has been nurturing a screenwriting career on her free time. This is part 2 of 2, so if you haven't heard part 1, you can pause this episode and go back to hear about Deirdre's long career as a producer. Part 2 will be here when you're ready. If you're still here, coolio, get ready to hear about Deirdre's side hustle.
Let's talk about your screenwriting now. That's a good segue. So when did you start writing? Were you writing the entire time since being a production secretary, or did you pick it up along the way?
No, I've always loved movies, and I didn't really start until I was actually at Nickelodeon. And I don't know if it was just a timing thing. I was in my 30s then. And I've loved movies so much all my life. And I thought, I have to kind of, you know, I'm still always like the annoying hypercritical. Like if I go see a movie with my friends, they'll be like, that was great. And I'm like, but I don't know if Act 2 really hung together. And they're like, shut up, let's go get a drink. So I always think very analytically when I watch films. And I finally thought, I've got to stop, you know, talking the talk. And I need to walk the walk and actually try to write one of these things. And so I started, when I was at Nickelodeon, it became one of my extracurricular activities. So I've been writing now for about 12 years. Yeah, 12 or 13 years in earnest. Mm-hmm. And I've got a number of screenplays under my belt now. And I love it. It's challenging, and it's especially challenging when you do have a full-time job. But I, like I said, I really love independent film. And I think because you see a lot more diversity and unique voices and stories that are unusual but still inspiring or compelling. So that's sort of the area I could see myself landing in. Not that I wouldn't mind writing a nice hit movie, but... But I personally like smaller, more niche stories. And yeah, so that's what I've been doing. It, like I said, it's been good having the past 8 months off because I could refocus my energies into my writing. Land Before Time was a really great project to work on, just wonderful crew. And like I said, working with Davis Doy as the director, he was fantastic and just such a gentleman and super talented. And working with Lisa Melby as the producer was great, but it was a challenging project. Surprisingly enough, you'd think, oh, it's, you know, Land Before Time. They've done 13 of these already. How tough can it be? But there were a lot of, I don't know if obstacles is the right word, but it was just a lot of work that left me pretty drained at the end of a day. Mm-hmm. So it was very hard for me to then sit in front of my laptop again and try to come up with something creative. And then you feel guilty because you're not working. I don't know if you ever go through this with your own.
Every single day.
Yeah. You're like, shoot, even if I had just written 2 pages, at least it would be 2 more than I had before. But that's why it became important to me to take another hiatus and just focus on it. And it's ultimately on me. Sometimes you just have to dig deep and find the energy. And even if you do only write half a page, that's at least something, and it's more than what you had before. So going into my next animation job, I want to really make a point to try to stay disciplined about my writing. Luckily, I just started a new project with a friend of mine. We're going to try to tackle a rom-com because I think so many recent ones are pretty terrible and we love good rom-coms. Yeah. So we're going to work on that. And it's always good having a partner because you have to be accountable. So I think we could probably get this script done by the end of the year if we, awesome. Yeah. So
I want to work on it when you produce it because, like, I love romantic comedy so much.
Well, you know what? That's funny you say that because we're actually, I shouldn't say too much about it, but we're introducing an animation element to
really?
It. Yes. Right. Because I want to use some of my knowledge from just what I've been doing in my career for the past 20 years. And I thought that would be fun. And not that it hasn't been done before, because I know Beginners had some animation in it, I think, which wasn't really a rom-com, but still, well, maybe it was a very charming film. And my friend and I, we just watched 500 Days of Summer again. There's not really, there's animation in, like, the drawings because his character is an architect. So there's that. But, yeah, we've got something pretty specific in mind. So we'll see if we can pull it off. But, but point being, I think writing with a partner will keep me focused on carving out time to do it. So.
Yeah. And it's nice that you have that deadline.
Yes. I think that helps. I mean, I will say for any writers out there, that's why I like entering contests, because they can provide a deadline. Austin, the film festival, runs a writing contest for both screenplays and TV pilots, and it can be an animated piece too. Mm-hmm. And the Motion Picture Academy runs a very well-respected fellowship called the Nickel Fellowship. Oh. Now that's for screenwriting, but that's a good one to enter. A lot of these, the submission date has already come and gone, and now it's just waiting for the results. But it does help give you some structure and focus when you have a deadline to shoot for. And I've also, just to throw in a few plugs here, I started participating in some workshops. There's a workshop run by this organization called Blue Cat, and it's a writing organization, primarily screenwriting, but they, you know, they'll look at TV scripts too. And it's run by Gordy Hoffman. He's run it for a long time, and he's a filmmaker, writer, director. He's the brother of Philip Seymour Hoffman. And he holds workshops in LA. He probably does about 4 a year, and then he'll do some online ones, and then he'll also travel the country. So he'll go to different major cities, and it's basically just a day where you're analyzing scripts, and he'll accept up to 7 scripts. So you come in with your script with 6 other writers, and then he also welcomes other writers if they just want to audit it. So he'll take maybe another 5. So it's a pretty small group, maybe, 12 to 14 people. But you spend the day, each hour is dedicated to one of the scripts. And you go through and you get everyone's feedback. You get Gordy's feedback, and he's extremely insightful. And he runs a really good discussion. He's very good at facilitating it so that no one talks too much. But he really is smart in his observations. And again, I just have found it helpful if I know I have a workshop coming up. Yeah. It's like, all right, I better get this script whipped together. So I've had a few scripts go in now, and yeah, it's been useful, and it's fun too. I like it because you get to talk craft with other people who are doing it, and I always meet some really great people. So
I bet it's really inspiring and keeps you on your toes.
Yes, because it's important. I don't know if you find this, but I think it's just good to keep those analytical tools polished, because it only teaches you how to be a better writer. And it's really nice when you're working with really good people, because it's like, you know, learning a sport. Like if you play tennis, my ex-boyfriend said this, he was a very good tennis player, but he always liked playing with people better than him because it made him a better player. And I feel that way with writing too. Yeah. And I think, you know, you could say that for art, for whatever. So.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd say, and I don't know if you see this at Disney, but another neat thing with Nickelodeon and the internship program is sometimes artists will mentor interns or PAs or whoever, as someone with an art background. And I think if you're an artist just starting out in your career, if you can find someone, an artist who's been doing it for a while, who's doing what you want to do, and you feel like you could approach them about mentoring you, I think there are a lot of people out there who'd be willing to help. And I've seen it happen. I did actually see it, now that I think about it, happen at Disney. But I saw it happen at Nick too. And it's kind of a way of giving back, but I just think it's enormously helpful to anyone who's trying to carve their way through.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think the tricky part is like asking someone.
Sure.
I feel like from a few, I've witnessed a few like that, and it seemed much more organic than being like, will you mentor me?
Right. You know? Yeah.
I think it's a little awkward when you're like, will you mentor me?
It's right.
Like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
But if
yeah.
you just kind of ask for feedback here and there.
Yes.
They end up mentoring you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Without feeling like they're yeah. giving you all their time.
You're on the spot. Yeah. So I guess it's good to identify the person you'd want to have as your mentor, and maybe not outright ask, but just sort of gently work your way in. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think it's interesting when people talk about their mentors, because I don't know if their mentors already always realize that they're mentoring them,
right?
Because like me and the PA and I on this show,
uh-huh,
obviously Jen mentors both of us,
right?
But she never says that, and when we say it, she's like, yeah, you could kind of see her flinch a little.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
But I think it's just like realizing, oh, yeah, I do, don't I?
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, that's a good thing if you're having a good influence on people who are learning and wanting more knowledge and information. So
mm-hmm.
There are two forums I visit. There's screenwriting forums, or writing forums, I should say. One is called Done Deal Pro. And the other one is called Movie Bytes, MovieBytes. And both of them have message boards. And Movie Bytes also has basically a section where various contests are reviewed. So you can see what other writers are saying about the contests. And the same goes for Done Deal Pro. They have a discussion area that's all about contests, and so people will weigh in. And you can, I think an article came out recently about some of the best ones. Just from my perspective, it's Nickel for sure. That's really like the granddaddy of them all. Page is very good. Austin is good. Final Draft, the software company, they put on a contest called Big Break. I was part of one called CineStory. This is sort of, it's like a little unspoken gem in the contest world. I almost wonder if the organization doesn't want to get too much attention,
yeah.
But it's a great, great organization. Again, it's called CineStory, and they run a contest. they do two. One is for screenwriting, one's for TV writing. And there wouldn't be there. You could submit an animated script if you wanted to. There are no restrictions on content. So they run. I entered their screenwriting competition a few years ago and made it to the semifinals. And if you make it to the semifinals, you're invited to a retreat that they hold in Idlewild, which is in like the mountains, you know, north of Palm Springs, or I guess west of Palm Springs. Anyway, they do this long weekend retreat, and it ends up being about, I'd say, 20 writers. There are the semifinalists, and then there are usually three, like two finalists, and then the grand prize winner. And there are maybe 15 industry mentors. And these are really good mentors. Meg LaFauve has been one, and she's the woman who wrote Inside Out. Her husband always goes, Joe Forte, who's a very good writer-director in his own right. The guys who wrote Children of Men, they were, I think, the first fellowship winners. So now one or both will go back for the retreat. So you get to meet really successful, talented, working writers. And also they bring in managers and agents. So it's a good mix of just industry people. And they have panels all week. And then everyone who is attending, you get paired up with three mentors and you get three individual 90-minute sessions. So that was really cool. And one of my mentors was Philip Eisner, who wrote Event Horizon, the sci-fi film. And he was fantastic. And I think he teaches at UCLA too. And I think he's doing a sci-fi channel show now, but just a really cool guy and really thoughtful. And these mentors read your work and then give you notes on it. So it was good, but it also is important. What I find important about experiences like that and even the Austin Film Festival is not just what you're learning at the panels, but it's not the networking you might be able to do at the parties with such and such agent or, you know, whoever, the writer of whatever. It's meeting your peers. And I've made so many great friends, again, who are kind of going through the same experiences I am. We share each other's work. We swap scripts and give notes. And you think about it, it's like we're all kind of coming up together. And my hope would be maybe someday, if one of us got a TV show, we could bring in a couple of our writer friends whose work we know and love, and we could give someone a break. So I saw a panelist there who had won the Austin screenwriting competition one year, and he said, networking here isn't just about networking up. It's about kind of networking sideways and looking around and seeing what relationships you can build with your fellow writers. And I thought that was great advice. So, I mean, that's good for anyone in animation to think about who's starting out. You know, if you're PAs together but you're artists, well, maybe someday you'll be able to pitch a show together or work on one another's shows. You just never know, but it's important to nurture those relationships.
That's what we were told in college as well, to, you know, these are the people you'll be working with in the industry.
Sure.
You currently don't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is it like about live action that will make us lose you one day?
I don't know. I just think it had played such an early influence in my childhood. I just... You know, Superman was one of the early films I can remember seeing, and I just loved it. And it's one of those art forms that's always really been compelling to me. And I love actors. I love good story. I love good visual storytelling. And live action film just strikes a chord with me. I will say I'm really impressed with a lot of TV these days, and getting sucked into a lot of... That's another plus about being on a hiatus. You can catch up on some of the shows everyone's raving about. I finally watched the first season of Mr. Robot.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, it's on USA. It just got nominated for a few Emmys. And it's really a cool show. It's about a computer hacker and kind of that culture. Mm-hmm. But visually, I find it so impressive. And the showrunner, the creator, talks about using influences like Taxi Driver and David Fincher. It's just got such a cinematic quality to it. It's a gorgeous looking show. And then on top of that, it's well written and really well acted. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so I don't know. I like that storytelling. Not to say I don't like animation. I'd be intimidated to tap into that kind of storytelling. I just think you have to have such a special sensibility, and I think that's, you know, and you, it certainly helps to be an artist. You don't have to be. I know a lot of great animation writers who can't draw, but it certainly helps. There's a lot of magic, I think, that happens just through the drawing mm-hmm. process. So
yeah, that's very true.
Yeah,
I always think that storyboard driven shows are typically more funny.
Uh-huh, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Just because it is the artist writing the show, pretty much.
Yeah. And they can also get unwieldy, too, so it's a challenge because I think you can have the benefit of too many good ideas, and at some point you have to figure out, okay, how are we going to condense this to an 11-minute story or episode? But, yeah, I mean, it's funny because I loved SpongeBob, but I really loved FOP, Fairly Odd Parents, and that was a script-driven show, we benefited from that, so...
My favorite line from Fairly Odd Parents is "Super Toilet." I loved that ongoing joke.
Oh my gosh! I'm not even remembering that.
Super Osmo would always be like "Super Toilet," and it'd be
oh
like a
my
huge
gosh!
Toilet, or he'd just turn people into toilets. It's just.
Was that from early on?
I think so.
I remember Philip the Nickel. I know that became kind of a running. I thought that was a running gag, so yeah. My favorite, I always loved the character of Tootie on Fairly Odd Parents. She was Vicky's little sister who loved Timmy.
I remember that.
And Gray Delisle voiced her and Vicky, and oh, she was so cute. She was always in some of my favorite episodes, so yeah.
Oh. So what's your plan to get to where you want to go?
That's a good question. Yes, always keep writing. Right now, I mean, another reason contests can be helpful is because it does give you some exposure. And, you know, like the Nickel Fellowship is through the Academy. The people involved with it are all people you've heard of. And I think there, if you win it, you get an industry mentor. And really great. I mean, Vince Gilligan was a semifinalist one year. Susanna Grant, who wrote Erin Brockovich, I'm pretty sure she won the fellowship one year. Like, they have a lot of great alumni. So contests can be a great stepping stone if, you know, they're the right contest. Yeah. So I'll continue entering some of those. And then I'm also trying to start querying companies and just trying to get scripts read and utilize whatever contacts I have to get some of my stuff on desks and maybe hopefully find an agent too. I have a few things that are progressing, mm-hmm. but it's a slow progression. Yeah. And I just keep reminding myself that it took 20 years for the producers of Dallas Buyers Club to get it made. And I think it was a beautiful, wonderful film. And when you hear the story of the actors that were attached to it and then dropped out, and, you know, you feel like, all right, well, maybe 20 years was okay because they ended up with Matthew McConaughey and he was fantastic and won an Oscar. So I'm hoping my films don't take 20 years just to get to the production point. But yeah, but I do want to say, and I think this goes for artists out there too, it can be so frustrating. I heard a great quote. It was on the John August. I don't know if you've heard of Script Notes. Yeah, John August and Craig Mazin. They interviewed, he's now a psychotherapist, but he was a writer. His name is, I think, Dennis Palumbo. Uh-huh. And Dennis, I hope I'm getting his last name right. Anyway, he said he was at a seminar once and someone asked him, what's, you know, the most important quality for you to have as a writer? And he said, the ability to tolerate despair. And I thought, that is so perfect, because I think that's how a lot of us feel. Like, you can just feel so hopeless and you know, you're not getting any traction on your work. But the one thing we have to remember, whether we're writers or artists, whatever, we have control of our own output. And through producing work, through continuing to draw and continuing to write, you're only getting better. And I think that's really important to focus on. So when I'm feeling blue, I just try to remember that. And I also try to go back to the movies that have inspired me, and I'll watch them again and get that jolt and feel like, yes, this is why I keep, you know, plugging away. But I will also say, and I think what's great for artists too, especially people of your generation, is you are coming up in this exciting age of the internet and very accessible media, and this idea of just going out and making your own work, I think, is more attainable than ever. And that's another thing I'd encourage people to do. Just, you know, get together with friends and support each other on working on your own animated projects or shooting a short film. I mean, I am hoping to do that at some point. I have a friend who's a director, and she's great. And we talk about, we got to just come up with a script that we can shoot quickly and just put it up and see what happens. I've had friends find great success doing that. You know, you never know what could be the next viral animated video or live action video. So it's a good time to take advantage of all the technology that's out there. But that's the thing, just to keep doing it and persevering, because I think it's the mental game that can be the most challenging. And I would also say, here I am getting into, you know, big advice mode, but I think it's important to surround yourself with like-minded, positive, supportive people. Not that you can't get down. You certainly can, and we all do and have our cocktails and lament. But I feel like I've really established a wonderful group of friends who are rooting for me, and I'm rooting for them. And that's what helps you keep going, too. You kind of got to get the negativity out of your life, because it's just a drag, and you know there's enough to feel bad about. So, So don't let anyone tell you you can't do it or your work's not good enough. You just have to keep plugging away and getting, you know, good honest feedback that hopefully makes you better.
So, have you ever thought about giving up?
Sure.
How long did that last?
It's probably a daily thought that passes my mind. But, you know, I don't know what else I'd do. Like, it's weird. Like, I think when you're a creative person, you can't stop. Like, I will always think in stories. That's just how my brain works. I can't imagine it not working that way. Like, even if I'm doing something mundane, like sitting in my car at a crosswalk, if someone crosses my line of vision, I'll start thinking, you know, I could see a dude just walk in front of me, and I'll start thinking, oh, what's his backstory? Like, what character would I create out of that person I just saw crossing the street. And I'm that way on a regular basis. You know, I'm a daydreamer, and I love listening to music and imagining scenes, and I'm always thinking about scenes in my scripts and what I need to improve. I'm thinking about new stories with the rom-com. I'm now brainstorming new ideas of how to make it a fun rom-com. So, yeah, it's like I won't be able to turn that part off. So I just have to keep servicing it, I think, and hope, have faith that the planets will align and the universe will shine down on me, and maybe I can make a living writing and producing films that are really meaningful to me. But in the meantime, having a day job in animation is certainly nothing to sneeze at. And I get a lot of inspiration being around creative people. Like, I think it's a good environment for me to be in. It keeps me motivated. And I meet really incredible, talented people. I don't know if I'd feel that way if I were working at the DMV every day or yeah. something like that.
So true. And in live action, it doesn't really seem like their studios are set up like animation studios. You know, like, most of the screenwriters are probably freelancers, right?
Yeah, they're more guns for hire, unless you're in television. And then if you're lucky, you find a nice long gig like Breaking Bad or whatever and do that for a number of years. But... there's not really like an entry system into it. Although I shouldn't say that, because I think for me the problem is I came into writing maybe a little too old. Not that I couldn't go into being a script coordinator or a writer's assistant, but it's hard when you get to a certain point in your life and you've got different financial obligations. So there is a way to work your way in through being a writer's assistant, working in a writer's room, and coming up that way. It still, I'm sure, is a lot of hard work, but actually, when I think of it, like, I know a couple of people, or know of a couple of people who started as writer's assistants and then became staff writers. And one of them is, his first name's Gordon, and he was the writer's assistant on Breaking Bad. And eventually he worked his way into getting a staff position. I think, you know, maybe they gave him a script. And I know now he's on staff, or he has been on staff for Better Call Saul. So that's definitely an avenue. And when I meet people, especially young people who just graduated and want to break into animation and particularly writing, I'm always trying to keep my eyes open for positions that put them more in contact with the writer's room as a, you know, coordinator or a writer's assistant. So, yeah.
Yeah. How, like, because you've known most of the people that you've ended up working for, they recommended you, with having this, like, huge passion for writing on the side, like, you're really high up there to not be, like, solely, like, focused on producing. Has it ever, like, given you trouble? Or are people usually like, you know, that's your free time, do whatever, as long as you do your day job?
Oh, in terms of, like, people who know that... Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a pretty straight shooter when it comes to that stuff. And I take my job really seriously. I don't want to do a crappy job. And I've been fortunate enough to work with really good showrunners, and I see that relationship as a partnership. Mm-hmm. And I'm there to help service their vision of their show and to do it in a way that makes it a fun and supportive environment. And I'm also there to please the executives and get things done on time and under budget. So I take that stuff really seriously and want to do a good job. So I so far haven't had any issues with it, but
that's good.
Yeah, yeah, knock on whatever this is. Is this wood? It looks like fake wood, but IKEA wood.
So in live action, like TV writing, it sounds like from just things I've read, that the writers are often producers because they see their scripts to the end. You know, they're on set when they're being, you know, shot. But sometimes the producers are like the story editors or like the head writer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about maybe doing that? I'm just curious.
Well, I think there are TV shows I'd love to work on. I think they'd be such a great boot camp in how to be an amazing writer. I mentioned Better Call Saul. I love that show. And I've seen panels with Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, who created it, and they're both so impressive and thoughtful. Another favorite writer of mine is John Ridley, who does American Crime, and he wrote 12 Years a Slave. And he, I just like as a person. I've seen him on panels. So that's... It would definitely be appealing to me. I think, too, there is sort of a hierarchy. I think you come on as a writer, and then maybe the next season you might be story editor, and then you might be a co-producer, and then you might be... Like, each season, I think it's a bump in title. But typically, I think... Well, I can't even say typically. I don't know for sure. But I'm like you, I've heard of shows where no matter what your title is, if you're the writer of the episode, mm-hmm. you get to track it through... to when it's shot, which, yeah, I think that would be fun. It's kind of strange to me that it's the directors who float in and out of TV shows. Some stay steady with the series, but often it's the director who just shows up and has to kind of figure out the ropes and do direct it in the style of the show, mm-hmm. but not really... have the same sort of creative control that they get in the world of features. So,
yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how, like, some of these hierarchies got set up and why, like, all of them are pretty much the same.
Right.
Probably changed a little bit.
Well, and I guess, too, I mean, certainly once you are getting into the executive producer, you know, when it's your show, that's a whole new set of responsibilities. But for writers going up, I think, again, it's just each title is an acknowledgement of your experience on the show. So,
mm-hmm. One of our last questions.
Okay.
How do you feel about female representation in the media currently?
Well, again, like we were talking about with film and animation and TV, I think it could be better. But I think the internet can be our friend because people aren't getting away with their bullshit, if I can say that, with their BS as easily because now, you know, for better or for worse, there is an army of women and you know, men, anyone, there are people who call out bad behavior. And I think that's a good thing. I wish I could think of a good example of that happening. Oh, gosh. Oh, maybe it was. Well, even with the guy who was found guilty of raping the Stanford rapist, right. Found guilty of raping her and given such a light sentence. And the outcry on media, you know, while it was still terrible that his sentence was so light, there was something reassuring to me that these voices rose up and really spoke out against it. So I hope that helps. I mean, it's tricky because the internet also has a lot of trolls and a lot of negativity and not always a lot of facts happening. But I feel lucky. I find generally on my social media, there's always a lot of really thoughtful discourse happening and thought-provoking discussion. And I think that's a good thing, just to keep people communicating about all of the issues going on. So as it reflects women, I think luckily we've got a lot of vocal ladies out there who will come to the defense of each other. And I mean, even that letter that the victim wrote, I thought was so powerful and incredible. So I think that's a good thing, if that makes sense.
I think so.
What do you think? I mean, how do you feel a representation is?
I'm always trying to define it, pretty much. I think we need, you know, not that we need fewer princesses in the media.
We
just need more variety.
Yeah.
You know, one reason I loved Ghostbusters so much was it was four very different type of women.
Right, you know? Right.
And some that you've never seen before, you know, yeah. In general.
Yeah.
You know? But I feel in, like, comedy, they, like, it feels like typically you play a character close to yourself so that you can be, like, bring a real true, honest, like, point of view.
Right.
To the entire performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think it can be improved.
Yeah.
And it's also a little bit of fear in, like, what should I say? Because it's such a hot-button topic these days. And it's interesting how people react to it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because, like, I do believe in, like, in the situation of fewer women directors and writers. Like, you do hire the best person for the job. Like, I believe in that. But it's also too bad that, you know, because ladies are just now getting to these higher positions, there's fewer women with such experience because it has been such a boys' club.
Right, right.
Know, in the early days. So, you know, it's tough. But, like, it's going to get better and better because women are realizing how important their voices are.
Right,
and they're joining
right.
the conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
That's a good way of putting it. Well, and if we're talking about, like, characters and... You know, there was that really interesting, and I've started calling some of my writer friends on it, too. There was that really interesting Twitter feed that came out that an executive kept, and it was like a running post of how women are described in the scripts that he or she was reading at the time, and most of them, it all had to do with her physical attributes, and so now I really pay attention to that. When I'm reading other people's work and I'm like, dude, I got to call you on this because, you know, she doesn't have to be staggeringly beautiful if, you know, she's just in the scene for nanosecond.
Even though she's the lead, what else makes her interesting
and complex? That's what pulls you in. And I think it's really exciting, actually, talking about Ghostbusters, seeing Melissa McCarthy and her success.
Yeah.
Because I've watched her. I didn't watch Gilmore Girls. I know a ton of people love that show and loved her in it. But she came on my radar pretty early in her career. She did that John August film, The Nines. Okay. I don't know if you ever saw it. She's great in it. And I saw her at a showcase at Nickelodeon, of all things, again, early in her career. And she was so sweet. So to see her succeed is really great. Like, again, it's another great example that there are actresses out there who can transcend what expectations people have and play people that we're just compelled to watch. And she's that kind of actress. And I know there are more like her out there. It's just giving them a chance. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited that she's done so well. And I love Kate McKinnon too. I'd love to see her continue to have a successful film career or TV career, and Kristen Wiig is great, and she's made some interesting choices in her career. She goes very indie. So, we just have to keep putting it out there and supporting each other, and also, you know, acknowledge the men who are very supportive of women, like Paul Feig, and because we all have to work together. And just because I want to see more women on screen and behind the scenes doesn't mean we don't want to work with men. Yeah. I've had amazing bosses who are men, and I've had great men working for me. So, yeah, it's just figuring out how to get that more equitable representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. This was great. Thanks, Cassie. Yeah,
thank you. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. It helps us reach a wider audience and share these stories. In sharing these female voices, we strive not only to help pave a path for aspiring women professionals, but to build a community and safe space for female creatives to support and empower one another. Like life, working in these industries is not a destination, but a journey of hopping from project to project. So I think we can probably all use the support. Want to chat? We're on Twitter at Ink, the letter N, Pink Girls, on Facebook at Ink and Pink Girls Podcast, or email us at inkandpinkgirlspodcast@gmail.com. The Ink and Pink Girls Podcast is brought to you by me, Cassie Soliday, and produced by Val Patron in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Bank Girls Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.